magazine. We've had a jam-packed show, and we've got our last guest who's just joined us. It's Simon Warrender, sorry, who's the director of the Melbourne Prize. And you've been in here before, and we've had a bit of a discussion about the Melbourne Prize. But we're going to discuss it again because we've got some, you know, some more news, some more progressions in this whole prize process. So, but first we'll start talking about you, Simon, and you know, a little bit of your history and how you've gotten to the arts.
Well, thank you, firstly, for having me on your show. It's been it's been a real pleasure. In short, really, my interest in starting the Melbourne Prize 15 years ago was to give Victorian writers, musicians and sculptors an opportunity, because I think we all know artists struggle, and I think the Melbourne Prize was an idea that I came up with, a city offering great opportunities to its artists in its own name rather than the name of an individual. And 15 years later, we're growing and still going, which is good.
Well, it's great because, I mean, you know, arts in Melbourne need as much encouragement and support as possible. So things like your prize is, you know, is a great initiative, and it really does motivate the three different areas. So tell us, you know, how it's broken up.
I think when I started the Melbourne Prize 15 years ago, I felt that rather than have one... concentrate on one sector every year would be limiting, because it's a small market. And I'd just actually done a public art project in the Botanic Gardens. I'd commissioned the magic pudding sculpture in the children's garden, and sculptors I know needed support and recognition. And I felt literature and music were you know, two very good partners, and which made up three sectors that needed support. And the Melbourne Prize, we started in 2005, and we offer, I think, in those three sectors, if not the most valuable prize in the country, is certainly in probably in the top three. And I think that's good for the city. And certainly 15 years ago, when Melbourne was at the beginning of its cultural revolution, or as they say, the cultural renaissance, let's put it that way. Not a revolution.
Yeah, I think that's something else.
Yeah, lots of revolutions on other things these days. It was a cultural renaissance, and I just think we caught the wave, and it was a good thing.
Mm. So, Simon, you've mentioned that you previously had a role doing a competition for a sculpture for the children's garden, or you were commissioning a sculpture?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk briefly about that.
No, I just want to, it's like, it sounds like, you know, the Melbourne Prize just sort of sprung up like a mushroom in your life, but you've obviously had a lot of work in the arts to sort of get to that place. What was the sort of logical steps that brought you to creating this prize?
I wonder if there's anything in life that's logical.
Well, that's true, of course.
In short, I had the opportunity to join a group called the Committee for Melbourne, their future focus group. We had to come up with a city project. My idea was a children's garden based in the city, with its centrepiece being a life-size sculpture of probably one of our most loved children's stories, The Magic Pudding. And that was a two-year project. I got a small team together. We funded it, and we launched the children's garden at the Botanic Gardens, and then a major foundation went on to support it. At that time, why I don't know, but the notion of a city supporting its artists in the name of the city was an idea, frankly, that just came to mind. And I remember one night in particular, I Googled London Prize, Paris Prize, New York Prize, Tokyo Prize, and there was nothing. And the next week, I registered the name Melbourne Prize, and I started with $0 in the bank, and I was working full time. But to raise money for the prize, what we did is we worked for 2 years to get copyright to produce the magic pudding sculptures in the Botanic Gardens, and I got copyright to produce miniatures of what had become a landmark in the city virtually overnight. And we sold them like hotcakes, and they gave me enough money to start the Melbourne Prize in 2005. So if that's a logical progression, I hope it is.
Yeah.
My interest and my background, my mother in particular has had a long history in supporting the arts. She started the Museum of Modern Art,
wow,
which really gave the early Australian painters their start. And
so the Museum of Modern Art in Sydney?
Sorry?
The Museum of Modern Art in Sydney?
No, the Museum of Modern Art...
Oh, no, that's the MCA, Contemporary Art, sorry.
It was called the Museum of Modern Art and Design, and it's now, after many decades, it resides at Heidi. Mm. But so I grew up around that
makes
notion
a lot of sense,
of supporting artists. I really wanted to be a ski instructor.
Oh.
But...
sounds much more
if
active.
The truth be known.
I think that's an art of a kind.
What's that?
I think that's an art of a kind. Skiing.
Certainly is. But I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense that it's sort of arts philanthropy is in the family and you'd grown up obviously seeing artists being commissioned and having their work valued and...
But gathered. One thing I think is very important, and it could be controversial to say this, but I think... with support of the arts, people's names, the people that support the arts, their names are up front and then the money follows to the artist. And I wonder who gets the most profile. But I feel that a city supporting the arts is very healthy because there's no individual. It's not the Simon Warren Prize. I mean, who would care? But it's the Melbourne Prize, and that incumbent in that is everything that Melbourne is artistically.
Mm. Yes, and Melbourne deserves it, I think, because it is the cultural capital of Australia, we believe.
Of the world, sorry.
Of the world.
So in order to make it the Melbourne Prize, quote-unquote Melbourne, do you, really foster the kinds of judges that are multidiscipline, a broad representation of Melbourne? How do you encapsulate Melbourne into this prize?
It's a very good question. I think, firstly, if you look at our supporter base, state government, City of Melbourne, a number of iconic Melbourne organisations, I think if you look... The main thing about the Melbourne Prize, and this is something I believe in very strongly, I was criticised for it in the beginning, but I didn't let that worry me, was to support cross-genre talent, because I think music can be siloed. People think that classical musicians are more talented than hip-hop musicians, that figurative sculptors are more talented than ephemeral sculptors, novel writers are more talented than poets. I don't believe that. I think talent's talent.
Mm.
And this is what's unique about the Melbourne Prize. We are cross-genre. And I think what we do is we've now established ourselves as that. And the judges see that. And we establish a judging panel that encompasses as many voices as possible across all genres. And that's reflected certainly this year.
So this year it's music.
Music.
So you've had literature and you've had sculpture, and so now this year it's music, so it's the Melbourne Prize for music. So talk to us about the genres that have been represented in the finalists this year.
We have... there are three prizes this year, and I'm happy to run through them if you'd
please
like me
do.
To.
Please do.
There's the Melbourne Prize for Music, which is $60,000, and we call it the new Melbourne Prize because instead of looking for somebody... who has a body of work that may be more established in their career, this year we're looking for just an outstanding Victorian musician, full stop. And there are a number of finalists in there. There are five finalists in that. I'm happy to name them.
Please do, yes.
Deborah Cheatham, David Bridie, Andrea Keller, Ecky Veltheim and Sophia Bruce. And they represent everything from opera to classics to pop to, and I think it's a broad representation. Then we go on to the Development Award, which is $18,500, which is really for a Victorian musician that demonstrates outstanding musical talent. We have Aviva Endean, Mojo Juju, who I think was mentioned before.
Yes.
Scott McConaughey, Kate Warp, and Elizabeth Welsh. And they are, again, represent... a broad genre, and that's what we find we get in the finalists, the applicants that enter and the finalists that the judges choose, a broad representation.
Can I just quickly ask a really dumb question?
Do you
have to be a Victorian resident to qualify
yes,
for the prize?
Do.
Okay,
so not just Melbourne, anyone in Victoria can...
You have to reside... A lot of people we find take sabbaticals overseas and might be domicile overseas, but they reside in Victoria.
Mm. Great. So that's how you get in if you're an artist that is living in Victoria. You are able to enter.
Yeah. We have lots of people emailing from other states saying, uh-huh. please, can we enter? And I say no.
I have to move here. And then they can enter. And so talk to us about some of the judges. We had some very interesting judges this year who decided on these finalists.
This year we have six judges. Shall I just the final awards?
Yeah. Please do.
There's a Bulura Emerging Composers Award. We did have that award last time for a composer, but it's for an emerging composer. Mm-hmm. There are six finalists. There are five finalists. And we have a Distinguished Musicians Fellowship at the Melbourne Conservatorium of Music, which is $20,000.
Wow.
So there's quite a spread. The judges this year are Kate Miller-Heidke, who I think you'll all know.
We all know.
Represented Australia in the Eurovision.
Yes.
And we're thrilled to have Kate on board. Kucha Edwards, who was the last winner of the Melbourne Prize. We've now started to bring in our previous winners.
Mm. Which That's a great idea.
Creates a very nice dynamic around the table. Professor Paul Grabowski.
Oh, yes, musician.
Professor Lisa Lim, who's a wonderful composer. Melissa King, who's the Director of Artistic Planning at the MSO. And Helen Marcoux, who's the co-founder of Bakehouse.
Yeah, oh, yes.
So those six voices around the table, I think, represent as many different genres that we could we could find.
Yeah, and as you said,
academic training and not academic training.
Sure.
And so the spectrum of finalists that are listed does have that representation of what Melbourne music really is. I mean, we do have such a diverse and, sort of range of music that we can either go see live or appreciate. It's great to see the prize sort of, supporting that. So what's the next step for the prize?
Just on that point, Melbourne has really quite an extraordinary music culture. I mean, if you look at everything from venues like the Meyer Music Bowl to the pub culture, it's fantastic. Melbourne Music Week's coming up in November.
Yes.
Next steps for the prize. Finalists have been announced. The winners will be announced on November the 13th.
November 13th.
People can visit our website. If you'd like me to give the website, www.melbourneprize.org. And if you jump on the website, you can vote. And if you vote, you go into the running to win an overnight stay at Sofitel, Melbourne's Hotel for the Arts, who, as we all know, are great supporters of the arts.
So anyone can vote for the People's Choice.
Anyone can vote.
Yes, so jump on to the website to be able to vote for
sure.
So it sounds like there's, almost like $100,000 in prizes across those three categories. Is that right?
Yeah, it varies each year. We are funded through community investment. I'm always looking for an individual that has a lazy $8 million that they'd like to give us that we can live off the interest.
I'll talk to you off air.
But if you know anybody,
if you find anyone, please let us know.
I haven't yet. But we raise the money each year, and it varies. Some years it's $120,000, some years it's $90,000, which it is this year or thereabouts, but it's always significant. And the Melbourne Prize always remains at $60,000.
That's nothing to be sneezed at.
It's wonderful.
And arts can definitely do something with 60K, I can imagine, to advance their career.
We have a wonderful story of a winner who was standing next to a guest, and the guest recounted the story. He said, "I came into the auditorium with $6 in my pocket." And they walked out with $80,000 because they won the Melbourne Prize and the fellowship.
So that's wonderful.
It was a gorgeous story.
It is life-changing stuff for an artist, I'd imagine.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
It's amazing for artists to be able to be awarded in that way and to be able to sort of pursue their careers, without stressing about how they're going to pay their rent.
Yeah, absolutely.
as
most of us are, really, to be honest.
Exactly.
Okay, we've been talking to Simon Warrender, who is the director of the Melbourne Prize. This year it is the music category and it's going to be announced on the 13th of November. Thank you for coming in, Simon.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great show.
Thank you. You're on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.